broadcast room of the Geek Gala HQ. There are assembled Charlotte, North Carolina's four okayest geeks, created by the cosmic legends of their own mind. Starnslord, the Giddy Geeker, Carol the Cat, Tipples Tannenbaum. Their mission, to support local, to discuss all things geek, and to serve all fankind. They are the Guardians of the Geekery, the official podcast of the Charlotte Geeks.
Here with Michael Nestor,
hey,
a.k.a. the Realtor to the Geeks. Like, every time I turn around, one of my friends has bought a house from you or sold their house through you.
I'm trying to take over the world.
Well, and I see this. You're the only person that I see running around Dragon Con looking for a fax machine.
You were the hardest working man at Dragon Con, I'll tell you what.
It's like, I'll be sitting in the lobby waiting for Matt to come down or whatever, and there's Michael filling out more bill of sale forms and having to fax them somewhere.
He's got a stack of comics and a stack of documents.
And that is not a lie.
No.
Is true fix.
I think I honestly have sold a house at every single Dragon. This past Dragon Con, I sold too.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, the amount of money they charge you at the front desk at the Westin to send scanned emails or faxes is just. So I tried to get around.
Why don't you go to the little FedEx Kinko's place?
I tried that, but they want to charge you just as much, if not more.
Yeah.
They know they got you. They got
you. One time I left my credit card in there, and I had to get Troy and Adam from Rebel Base to come back in after hours to get my credit card because I had gone on to a panel.
Oh,
and I was afraid because
no.
It was one of those where it takes your credit card and then it doesn't pop it back out. So as a result of it, I'd left it in there.
Oh, man.
So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Short story. I tried to print something at Dragon Con last year for a friend's scooter. And I got the confirmation that it was done the day after we had gone home from Dragon Con. I was like, you're useless.
Lightning fast.
Yeah. I was like, that was not your speediest. But anyway, speaking of speedy, so you sell houses.
I do.
You also, you know, help people buy houses.
I do.
And you've been doing it for a while now.
I'm celebrating 20 years now this year.
Wow.
That's crazy.
It feels like I just started yesterday. I got into the business basically to free myself up to do more acting, not realizing that I would enjoy real estate as much as I enjoyed acting.
Oh,
so before that, I had been a real estate paralegal. I'd worked in property management, and then bam, real estate. And it seemed to, you know, how everything just kind of falls into place. And you're like, this is what I should have been doing all along. So, yeah, 20 years.
Wow.
So
are you still acting as well?
I am. I don't do as much as I used to. It's tougher to do as much theater as I once did because people want you nights and weekends.
Yeah.
I did a show, not this past Christmas, but the one before it, the Trailer Park.
Oh, the Trailer Park Christmas.
Musical. Yeah. I'm not good with, I will butcher the name of any show. So I did that one a couple years ago, but really I do more commercials, occasionally a film or TV thing or whatever, industrials.
Cool.
But I don't do as much acting as I used to, but I do when I can. So, but yeah, that frees up more time for me to do real estate. But yeah, I list houses. I represent buyers. I help people rent properties. I help sell lots. I do new construction. So I kind of do a little bit of everything.
So Starnslord and I are looking to buy our first house together.
We are.
Very exciting.
You better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely.
We, as you can see, we have currently outgrown the Geek Gala headquarters for sure.
I'm not even looking at the house. I'm looking at all the stuff in the house.
I know, which is like number one rule when you're trying to sell a house is like you have to depersonalize, right? So that's going to be a nightmare. But anyway, so if you were to give people advice about buying a home here in Charlotte, what's the key?
First step always is I plug them in with a good mortgage broker because I can make a lot of mistakes people always just want to hop in a car. I just want to go look at some houses and they guess at their price point and then we go look at houses. I learned this early on and I may say, well, do you know what your range would be? And they may say, yeah, I can look up to 350, 450, 500. And I'm showing them houses and then I find out Once we get them pre-approved, they're closer to 250, 300, 350. And now I've shot myself in the foot because I didn't get them pre-approved so that, to know what they could afford.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of times, too, not only what you can afford in terms of what you're pre-approved for, but what your payment might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because sometimes you may find we really ideally want to make whatever you're paying rent-wise. We don't want to have what's called rent shock, where you move over to your mortgage and all of a sudden it's $1,000 more than what you're paying in rent.
Right.
What people are finding now is that they find out whatever they're paying in rent, when they move over to their mortgage, it's typically lower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the rental market's been good in Charlotte, too.
Yeah.
So you're only getting pre-approved is really step one before, if I can catch someone before they've called. There are lenders that I would recommend and lenders that I wouldn't. So I have to be careful because some people work for those lenders and some people don't.
Sure.
But
not asking you to mention any names on air.
Usually, the larger banks sometimes can be a little bit more apt to just give you a pre-approval letter without really dotting their I's and crossing their T's, whereas smaller mortgage brokers can sometimes do a little more personalized work, which is, I think, what I put you guys in touch with. So
right, and then you're not running around at the last minute realizing that what you pre-approved them for, they still don't have all the paperwork together. For
correct.
So
we're both buying cars a month before we look for houses. That's good, right? Just joking.
I literally just put a house under contract two or three days ago.
Yeah.
And Leslie pointed out on Facebook that they'd bought a car like a month ago, but they hadn't posted it up on Facebook yet. And so she saw where she said, ta-da, it's the new car.
Oh, my God.
And I went, you know, because I've had deals go south when someone makes a major. You're under a financial microscope from the moment you write an offer to, or when you're under contract to when you close.
Right.
So if you, you know, like I'm like, don't go to Dragon Con and spend $2,000, which that would be difficult to do, but or difficult not to do.
That's right.
Which Dragon Con do you go to?
So I guess I'd have to tell them, hey, I'm heading to New York Comic Con. Can I just, you know, I'm going to spend this much. Is that going to mess up my mortgage application? But yeah, that so that when I saw that, she actually said, no, I did that a month ago, so we're good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, when we were talking to Steve
McCabe with Steve. McCabe Mortgage and Financial. Yeah.
I was like, so we have two cars and we both had gone without car payments for a long time. And then all of a sudden, my car was going to need like $1,500 worth of work and the Blue Book value was $184. Oh. So I was like, it's time to buy a new car. And then a year and a half later, you bought a new car because your car value at the time was $250 or whatever.
It was just a little bit higher.
Yeah.
I had a great trade-in on that one.
Yeah. But so now we both have car payments where for like 5 years, neither of us had one. And
welcome to my world.
Yeah, I know. And then a couple months ago, I took a job. I had been driving an hour and away each day.
Oh.
And September 23rd, I started a work at home job, which is wonderful. But now I'm paying a car payment for a car that I don't drive for weeks on end. Why do you think I let Carol borrow it? Yeah. Like, if nothing
she
else,
did
you're,
not
just,
notice.
You're just knocking the cobwebs out of it for me. So, you know, I was thinking about either refinancing it because, you know, I've had it long enough that I should be able to knock $50 a month off the payment or whatever, or trading it. And Steve was just like, no.
When you said the word refi, he's probably thinking that means they pull credit, they do a couple other fun things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I totally get it, but it's so funny because it was just like, I was like, this is why I wanted to contact him in January because we knew we wanted to buy in May. And I was like, any mistakes that we've made, we'd like to know now so we have 5 months to fix them. So it's a really interesting conversation. So okay, get your financing in order. That's one. What would be your next step?
So phase one is obviously getting pre-approved. Phase two is the part that can go quick or can take a while, which is figuring out what it is you want, where you want to live, how much you want to afford, and what, like if you're looking at a house or a condo or a townhome or I want to build or any of the number of things that you want to do. Because the Charlotte market's been a little bit crazy the past couple years, we're in a seller's market. So you're going to find quickly, as you've been looking online, things hit the market and then they go real quick.
Yeah.
So what I always tell someone is when it's time to start looking, we can like, but we can't love, because sometimes the first one might not be there. Or by the time we go to see it, sometimes, like I just showed one earlier today, and the guy said, yeah, I like it. I think I'd like to bring my mom and dad this weekend. And I was like, it won't be here this weekend.
Right. Yeah.
And so, of course, he probably, and I have to be careful how I say this because I never want it to sound harsh, but he probably needs to see one go away before he makes a decision, before he realizes how this market moves. Now, sometimes I can't predict what will move fast or what will move slow, but I've noticed the closer into town you are, the faster things move. The further out you go, sometimes it's a different market. I've sold a couple recently out in Gaston County, and Belmont moves a little different than Gastonia. You know, Concord moves a little different than Waxhaw. You know, so I sometimes love when I've got people that aren't looking in the, they're always going to get, these houses will all get five offers every day of the week versus a little further out when I'm like, okay, maybe this one won't move as fast. But phase two is, I guess if you don't have a realtor, to find a good realtor that will help you, which I hopefully would fit that bill for any of our listeners.
Yes.
But even if it weren't me, to find someone that's a good, solid realtor, do your background on them. You know, if even if you don't use me, use someone.
Go, Nestor. He's the bester.
What, like what most people don't realize is that a realtor, when you're buying property, is in essence free to you as a buyer because the commission is paid for by the seller. And nine times out of 10, there might be a for sale by owner out there that might not be willing to pay a commission, but usually they'll come around and say, well, I'd be willing to do what's called co-broking. So I have people all the time say, well, I'm going to save money and not use a realtor. But what they don't realize is by not doing that, then the listing agent, like if I have a house listed and you decide not to use a realtor, I've listed it for 6% commission. If you don't use that commission, then basically my company and I get that 6%. So there's a 3% out there built in for me to sell the property. But so I like to tell people, just use it. Even at new construction, I have people all the time call me, oh, well, I didn't know you did new construction. Everything they build new construction, they have a built-in commission. The good builders do. There's a few builders, I suppose, that are like, well, we'll give you a little bit less, but, you know, we get used to that.
Okay. Well, also, too, you're more familiar. It's your expertise as much as anything. I mean, you look at something and you know whether or not that's a good deal for the neighborhood, whether or not the restrictions or the requests that somebody's making is a valid request, and you know how to term things, I would assume.
If I have a lot of experts I draw in. If I look at something and think, well, that looks like it might have termites, then I bring in my termite guy. Or that roof doesn't look like it's perfect, I'll bring in my roofing guy. But the hardest thing I've noticed in real estate, at least in the past couple of years for me, isn't putting contracts on properties. It's getting contracts to closing. Because there's a lot of pitfalls along the way. People think, oh, well, there's a house, I'm just going to write an offer and go under contract. That's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. There's so many other steps along the way, particularly in a seller's market. The biggest one being, and I might be getting ahead of myself, but making sure a property appraises. Because when you have, if you three all love a house and you make an offer and you make an offer and you make an offer, it drives the price up. But if that seller and that listing agent priced it based on the comps and now it's gone up $5,000 over list, well, it might not appraise. And your lender's going to give you, let's say you're putting down 10%. They're giving you 90% loan to value off of your list price or off of our contract price, and it doesn't appraise by $5,000. Someone's got to come up with the difference. And a lot of times it's the buyer. Sometimes it's the seller. Frequently in my most of my experience has been there's a combination of the two. But you probably have enough for, hey, I've got my down payment and I've got enough for my closing costs. I didn't squirrel away another extra $5,000 just in case it didn't appraise. Right, so that becomes part of it. So I might get you to the house, but I might not be able to get you past, you know, it appraising. Another component is in a seller's market is a little bit more difficult if the seller feels like they have multiple offers and then we do the inspection and we find some things that need to be repaired. Is a seller apt to want to do those repairs? Now, if they're significant and I'm the listing agent, I would certainly say, yeah, you got a good offer. know, they've asked for things that are legitimate. It's a roof. It's leaking. You should fix it. You know?
Right.
It's a window. It's broken. It's letting air in. We should fix it. But some sellers will say, well, I've got five offers. Let's see if this one doesn't work. We'll go to the next one. Hmm. So that's been some of the things we kind of navigate. And I think that will start to change as the market, and it may be another year before we see it. But as we start, we got a supply-demand issue right now where we have more people wanting to buy houses than we have houses to sell. I'm hoping that as time progresses, that we'll start to see more people put their houses on the market. There's new construction. More new construction is starting now than we've seen in the past couple of years. So maybe that'll start to level off. And it may not get to be in a buyer's market, but maybe more of a balanced market between buyer and seller. You know, that's kind of my biggest challenge these days is get it to the finish line.
Just like the balance in the forest is so crucial.
Exactly. So, yeah. I'm sort of that gray zone, I guess. You just have to see. I'm the one that I balance the light and the dark.
That's right.
So what are some red flags that are pretty significant that people should be looking for when they're looking at a house?
You know what's weird? When you're looking at houses online, the first thing that always jumps out to me is if the first picture is not of the house. And that's just kind of a general rule in real estate for most realtors that have done it a while. Your first picture should be your best picture, but it should also be of the exterior. There was a movement a couple years ago where realtors were starting to have the best picture be the first one, even if it wasn't the exterior.
Hmm.
And that kind of threw some people because they'd be like, well, gosh, they show a picture of the kitchen, but it's the first shot.
Right.
Are they ashamed of their house? Do they not want to show the front? So a lot of times, if the first picture's not, then that usually throws a flag up for me, and I go, wonder why that's not. I either have someone that, a realtor that's wanting to change the system, which is not going to happen, or we have someone that realizes that the first picture, being the front picture, isn't going to sell it. I don't want to say it's ugly, but sometimes that indicates this might be an ugly house, or there's a reason I'm not showing my first shot. So In just a very basic sense, when I look through and I see listings, I kind of tend to go, wonder why that one doesn't have a good front shot. So
interesting.
I noticed that even in looking at renting, because I'm looking to rent an apartment.
Ah.
And so many apartments don't show the apartment. They'll show the fitness center, and this is our clubhouse. And it's like, no, I want to see where I'm living.
Yeah.
I don't want to see what your exercise bikes look like.
And we have a rental section of the MLS. And again, the same rule applies in the rentals. It really should be your front exterior.
Yeah.
Or if I wanted to see 416 Queens, what does that look like?
Right.
And I'm not quite sure why they don't. I guess they figure the fitness center is going to get you in the door, or maybe they make different rules when it comes to rentals.
Yeah, or they won't even have pictures of the actual apartment. They'll just have the layout.
Then I would say that's a red flag.
Yeah. I'm like, I actually kind of want to see what the apartment looks like on the inside.
Yeah. Well, we looking, of course, because we knew we're not going to be ready to buy until May, we drove through our old neighborhood and happened to see one of those open door apps where you can like click on it and walk inside. Well, first of all, that's a red flag to me, because if they'll let you walk inside, it's usually not a very good home.
We'll talk about open door and OfferPad and some of the other.
But it is a little addicting to be able to walk up to a house and be able to click on an app and walk inside a door. Now you have to give a bunch of your information, so you have to be very careful what you're willing to give, because if you're not paying attention, you may think you have to enter your information to get to the next one, and it will let you skip.
Yeah.
But we went to a bunch of houses, and then, you know, we kind of got the bug, because now we're like, okay, well, we need to figure out which area we want to look at. You know, like, know what you want, like you had said, so that when we are ready and say, okay, Michael, let's go buy a house, you're like, okay, what area do you want? So you're trying to, you know, just like, okay, we know we've got 3 months away. Let's do a little dream walking. We know these houses won't be there because the market's so tight, but like, at least we would know if a neighborhood is a good neighborhood or not.
It's good. It's a good way to test out areas. And I say it's never too early to start. I have people that are looking a year in advance to know the area or the neighborhood. So that's not a bad thing to do, actually.
Right. And we came home and we were looking through Zillow at pictures, and we looked at this one house, and I was like, huh. And I handed the picture to Matt, and he's like, oh, that looks interesting. We should go see it. And I said, we did go see it. Because
it was a disaster.
The thing was, is that when you walked into this house, the very first thing that you kind of walked into was the living room. Then you walked into a small kitchen that they had squeezed an island in. And when I say squeezed, I mean like literally you couldn't open the refrigerator door. The stove did not fit in the cutout in the granite for the stove, so it was on a lean. And it had, as small as this kitchen was, it had two cabinets above the marble.
Uppers.
Yeah. Uppers above.
So you couldn't see anybody.
You were the island. So you couldn't see anything. And it was just the most horrible system. And then we walked into the two guest rooms, and both of the guest rooms were fully carpeted, but they had sinks.
Oh.
Because it was a Jack and Jill.
It was bizarre.
So it's like,
bizarre.
I would not want to brush my teeth over carpet. Yeah. Like, you know, I wouldn't want to wash my hands over carpet. I mean, I just don't even want to know what's in that carpet.
And the sinks were both in the bedroom.
Yeah. So I've seen, it's a 60s style sometimes.
It was a Jack and Jill. Yeah.
It's so weird. Yeah.
But then we went back through and looked at the pictures. And all the pictures were strategically taken so that they were standing at the sink taking the picture into it. So you never saw the sinks in there. Yeah. And then they didn't have any pictures of the kitchen at all. So
that'd be another red flag.
That became a red flag for us. It's like, what aren't they showing? Right? Yeah. What aren't they showing? So if they're showing 57 pictures of the kitchen and they're telling you four bedrooms, but you're only seeing one picture, that there's something up with the rest of them. So
I wouldn't have even thought of it, but you said one that I would immediately mention. When you mentioned Open Door, there's several what we call iBuyers that are in our market now. One's Open Door, the other's OfferPad. You've probably seen giant billboards for this mysterious fellow named Mark Spain.
Yeah.
He's very similar. If I don't sell your house, I'll buy it.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we all know how that probably goes.
Yeah. Like for 50 cents on the dollar. Yeah.
Right? Your $300,000 house, I might buy for $150. But that's another flag sometimes, because I'll tell clients, oh, I got really excited about this house. I can't wait to see it. And I pull up and I see, oh, it's OfferPad. OfferPad is, it sort of serves its own function, but it's a, the reason I think of it as a red flag when I'm representing a buyer that's looking at one is that the average person is likely not going to sell their house. And apologies if there's any listeners that did use OfferPad or, because it does have its function. But the average buyer is likely.
Email us at nestoristhebester guardiansofthegeekery.com. That should be enough letters. They won't type all that out. But
most people, because they do advertise, oh, no showings. It's really easy. You know, there's no commissions, but there's fees.
Yeah.
And so while you may pay a 6% commission when you list your house for sale, what they don't tell you is there might be 7 to 8% worth of fees. So you kind of get it on the back end. It just sounds more convenient because they're buying your house on the front end, but then they kind of get you with other things. But what I always tell someone is if we come up to a house and we're showing and it's an offer pad or a, what was the other one I said?
Open door.
That usually tells me that there was some reason that seller felt it necessary to sell it to the easiest person that would buy it, because usually they're going to buy it for a lot less than what someone could sell it for. So sometimes it's weird things like what you mentioned about this kitchen or that bathroom.
Yeah.
Frequently, it's someone doesn't have the money to fix up their house, and their house is in bad shape, and it has mold, or it smells, or someone smoked up the house, or who knows what.
Or you put a ball on the floor and it rolls quite easily. Or,
I'll joke like, I mean, I'm sure there's wonderful houses on Tivola, so if anybody lives on Tivola, apologies. But like a house on Tivola, you know, that's a busy, busy, busy street. Yeah. That's an ideal one for someone like an Open Door or an OfferPad that it might not sell. But I always tell someone, I had a client that actually tried them and did it. And after the fact, they told me, and they said, what could I have sold it for? And I said, do you really want to know? And they said, yeah. And it was easily about $40,000 or $50,000 more. Wow. But because they were making some on the sale of the house, they bought theirs 5 or 10 years ago.
Oh, okay,
They felt like, wow, but look how much we're making, not how much they could have made. So I always say when we're showing houses, there's probably some good offer pad Open Doors out there. But most of the times when I see them, I'm like, wonder what this was. It always means to me, I need to investigate this a little further. So I'm trying to think of any other red flags. Days on market. If all of a sudden we notice that this house has been on the market for 385 days, granted, that doesn't always mean that this house is bad, something's wrong with it. It could mean that they overpriced it.
Yeah.
It could mean that they went under contract with somebody, and then that person lost their job, and then they put it back on the market, and then every person since said, why did that deal fall apart? Now I'm not going to buy it. But yeah. Sometimes days on market, sometimes it means there's an opportunity because they might be willing to negotiate. But I always look at days on market as, I wonder what's going on with that. Why did that one not sell? Since everything sells so quickly, if it's been on for longer than 30 days, I sometimes take a second look at it or try to figure out, is that one in a floodplain? Or is there some fire damage on this? Or what's going on? So,
what are some keys that they should look at when trying to pick a realtor?
Name Michael Nestor.
Well, yeah. No, Nestor is the bester, but there's a reason. Like, you're award-winning.
That's right. I did win the award last year for best real estate agent of Charlotte. So, yeah.
Yes. But also, you know, you're habitually recognized by your realtor firm.
I've had a good run. I also, you know, it's my business, so I guess I'm just not a good boss. I don't give myself a lot of time off. I kind of crack the whip on myself.
I was the worst boss ever. That's why I went back not working for myself.
I guess the first thing I'd say you want in a realtor is you want someone that's full-time. There's a lot of people that say, oh, I like what you do. That looks like fun. I'd like to give it a shot. But I'm going to keep my job at the bank, so maybe I'll just do this on the side. And I'm like, no, that's not how that works. If you want to be successful. So I'd say your first step is make sure your realtor's full time, because you don't want to say, hey, I want to go see houses. And they say, oh, I'm working this weekend. You know? You're not working doing this. Also someone that, you know, and I know some people that are new to the industry, but sometimes you do want someone that has had some experience. You don't really want them to learn on you. You want someone that either has a lot of experience or has a good team behind them, meaning they work for a good firm. I work for Dickens Michener. I've been with them for 20 years. I did a lot of research on who I wanted to work for. But there's a lot of great firms around town. So you want to be with someone that's with a good firm. And then I think the most important thing is really personality, because there have been clients that I've met that we just did not mesh well personality-wise. And they would say, I want a realtor that's going to be really pushy and make me do the thing I don't want to do. And I would say, well, I'm not that guy. I'm not going to push you or stress you out or be a car salesman. And some people want that, I guess. I don't know why, but that's not really my style. But I'd have to tell them, well, I'm probably not going to be the good fit for you. So that'd be my best way to recommend someone picking a realtor.
All right, so now it's time for stories, and then we'll wrap it up. Vitelli, you have posted some crazy pictures of things you've encountered over the years. Even today, you shared a picture that another friend had shared you of a sink that had an outlet in it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
What? Have you seen that one?
No, I have not.
Can I pull it up?
Yeah. You'll have to text it to Carol so that she can put it in the show notes.
This is a real photo of a real house.
In the sink.
Now, this is not a house that I ended up selling. Okay. But this is real life.
And oh, that is it. That's a newer square sink.
Yeah. It's just,
and there's an outlet right in it. And for those of you who are struggling with what's wrong with that, it's that there's water that goes in sinks, and that's electricity. That would be bad.
So. And I even made the joke. I said, well, I would at least hope it would be a GFCI, which is a ground fault circuit interrupter for when water does hit it. But
yeah, I was just like, who thought that was okay?
I don't know what that is.
This should not be legal, should it?
Yeah, I'm guessing that was probably
a do-it-yourself project. Yeah.
It won't pass inspection, I'm guessing.
Oh, no.
No, I jokingly say that I could write a book or a film about the things I've either seen in a house that I've walked in on, that I have experienced.
Oh, boy.
If you could think of anything you would not want to walk in on someone doing, I've probably walked in on them doing it at some point in 20 years.
Oh, so, wow. Like the scene from the Santa Clarita Diet.
You know, we've watched enough of that that we watched the first like 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah, where she just throws up everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I did step on, you remember Stephen C? He used to live here in town. I don't know that he probably, I don't know that he would be listening to this, but.
We love you, Stephen.
If you're listening, he never knew this because I never told him, but I was listing his house for sale. And the day we were going to have showing start, he had a bookshelf that he could not get rid of. He was supposed to have a friend come and get it, and I was trying to help him with it. And I just thought, well, I'll just, you know, he just said, just destroy it, knock it down to pieces and put it in the shed. And so I was knocking it down with a hammer in this yard, and I knew I had to be at a closing, and then I had showings. And, so I was trying to separate the pieces that had nails from the pieces that didn't, because Leslie was going to come and help me move it. And I didn't want her touching the ones that had nails. Well, then I get a call from someone wanting to talk about a house or whatever, and I forgot what I was doing. Oh. And so the next thing I knew, I stepped...
That never happens to you, right?
I stepped backwards onto this nail.
Oh!
And punctured my foot, and then there's lots of blood. And so I bled all over his driveway, and I literally had to ask Leslie, can you go back, as I have to rush to go bandage up my foot and get it, I said, can you go back and... you know, rinse out the blood from the driveway, because the last thing we need to see when someone pulls up is a murder scene in his driveway.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
But the joke was I had to get to a closing, and then I had to get to something else, and I didn't have time to, you know, go get a tetanus shot and get my foot taken care of, but
oh my gosh.
I had to find time to do it.
Yeah.
So, or I had a snake in a house one time. I went to go show a house, and
was it a pet snake or just an actual snake?
They said it was a little black snake. It was about a 6 foot long. I'll show you the video.
Oh yeah, the black snakes that they don't bite. Well, they're
nevertheless
pretty docile. Not a good thing, but yeah, they get really huge. Yeah.
I didn't feel comfortable leaving that house knowing there was a 6 foot black snake somewhere in it, but. I was able to call a pest control guy that I know to help me. This wasn't my house, by the way. So here I'm trying to assist with removing a black, you know, snake. I'm afraid of snakes, so that was
had to be snakes.
Or I think you saw the one I posted recently with all the colors.
Yes.
Yeah.
It literally was every color from a crayon box.
Oh my god.
The kitchen was orange, and then there was this mustard yellow. I mean, it was the most extreme colors I've ever seen.
That might have
most
been,
people said they didn't believe it was the same house.
It might have been Carrot Top's old house. I used to work at the Comedy Zone years ago, and he literally painted his house. Every room was a different color out of the other room.
Oh, gosh.
And I was like, you would never be able to sell this, Scott. I was like, there's just no way.
Everything just kept getting better and better in this house, because then you would get to the into the attic, and you open up the attic, and it's just got cardboard boxes where we would normally have drywall. They use cardboard boxes as drywall.
I think Mike Holmes would have something to say about that. Yeah.
And then you went out back, and there was this strange, I don't know what, it is on the deck, and it felt like it was like some sort of shack from the 1920s that they built on the back that it looked, and then there was three different satellite dishes on the side of the house.
I saw that picture.
Because
just like, oh my
two
goodness.
Aren't enough. You got to have three. So, yeah, it's just stuff like that.
All of the channels. All of them.
Or if you don't always knock on a door, I ring the doorbell, I knock on the door, announce myself when I come in, because there's been times when I walked in and Uncle Bob wasn't expecting me, even though I have an appointment.
Uh-oh.
Someone's called you, and I've said that, and Uncle Bob's got a gun and wants to know what you're doing there. So, wow.
Wow.
The first time I ever went to buy a house, similar market where it's like you just had to go and look, and it's like you go and put an offer in and you're one of five, and I probably looked at 100 houses before we found one that was going to work. But we went to this one house, and it was so Lowell, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. There is a very large contingency of Asian nations that mm-hmm. live there, and you know, they're very family oriented. So often you'll have mothers, fathers, grandfathers, and then cousins, et cetera, living in there. So that's fine. But we thought we had notified everybody, and we went in, and there was a cousin or something that had just arrived from the Philippines the day before, sleeping on a mattress, not sure what to do with all these people walking in the house. But also everything that was in their house was washi taped to the wall. There wasn't anything like officially, like the wallpaper was not attached. They had just taped it up in every room. And the tape was like starting to become like that crinkly tape you use around Easter baskets. And so we walked into the kitchen, and so clearly at one point they had gotten a larger fridge and then downsized. But when they got the larger fridge, it didn't fit, so they just cut off the corner of the cabinet.
Oh no.
So literally you could open the cabinet to get the plates, or you could reach in on the side and get the plates. And I was just like, and then they obviously had had a leak problem. So when we went to the basement, you know, they had the basement door, the dormer outside that you can open, like in, you know, Kansas to go to Wizard of Oz to go down the stairs. I forget what those names are, but you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom, to prevent any water from leaking, they had...
Storm cellar.
Yeah. They had built, like, a speed bump around the bottom of the steps to collect all the water that leaked down from the storm cellar door. Hmm. And I was just like, no, it's just way too much work. I mean, it was, like, a good-sized house, and, you know, I'm not afraid of a fixer-upper, but that wasn't a fixer-upper. That was a fixer-donor. I was just like, no.
Take it back to studs.
So, you know, I don't think we've told you, but in the next Starnes Lord Castle, Castle de la Starnes Lord, we want to put in a bat pool. Do you think that will be bad for resale value?
Is this you said bat pool?
So is it pole. Like shaped?
A pole.
Yeah, so we want a ransack.
I was thinking like a bat-shaped pool.
That would
like,
actually be awesome.
Cool.
Maybe that was a mistake then on purpose.
Now I'm interested in that. Yeah. So you totally got me off the bat pool thing.
I started to go, is it an above-ground bat pool or is it a below-ground bat pool?
Yeah, we're thinking like a ranch that has the option to have the walkout cellar in the back, you know, where it's built into the wall. So, because I need to live on a ranch level because of my stuff, but
and all the cattle we have to herd.
Yeah. But if we had a bat pole that went down to the podcast room, wouldn't that be kind of awesome?
I always tell someone,
how would we get back up?
Yeah, I guess that's the other thing.
Well, then we'd have a little spiral.
like they did on the show. I guess they had a little spiral that Alfred came down with milk and cookies, right?
Yeah. Elevator.
Because Alfred didn't come down the bat pole.
He just was like, I don't know why you guys use the pole. There's perfectly good stairs here.
Well, because they get changed along the way, which we wouldn't require of our guests, by the way. But, you know, there's certain things that, like, we definitely want to do. Like, I totally want to do the Lion Witch and the Wardrobe Door so that you're walking through a closet through the door. And, you know, why are you laughing?
Because I always felt, I love the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but I always felt that Aslan was a complete dick because...
He was a lion.
Yes. Because he had these four kids that he turns into kings and queens, and they're kings and queens forever and ever, so much so that they can't even remember what the damn lamppost is for. And then he throws them back into World War II England. Oh, and by the way, you're teenagers again. Ha ha.
But with all that wisdom and knowledge.
I just wanted to write the book right after that. Because I would be like, no, no, you don't. Get me back into it. I want to be queen again. I don't want bombs raining down on my head.
This has been...
Good point.
Carol talks about Wine, Witch, and Wardrobe. But
Voyage of the Dawn Treader has always been my favorite.
Yeah, but
speaking
then,
of the Narnia books, because it's on the ship and it's
on the ship and everything, but then you have the instance that Caspian marries this magician's daughter that Lewis didn't even bother to give a name to. She's just literally called the magician's daughter.
It's like the farmer's daughter.
That sounds fancy, though, right?
Yeah.
Tell us how you really feel, Kara.
I think, don't get me started on the last battle.
One of my biggest roles in theater, I played Mr. Beaver. When Imagineon Children's Theater opened up their giant facility, I remember sitting backstage between shows writing an offer in the Beaver costume because the assistant director had cast me, or the director had cast me, but she wanted to buy a house. And I remember thinking, I'm going to have time to do this. So I wrote offers in Beaver costume in Narnia.
Wow. There you go. So that would be unique.
There we go.
You ever sold a houseboat? Is that just a boat or is that a
house? It would be a boat. I guess it's more personal property. I've sold houses that have a boat, but never a houseboat.
Hmm. I didn't know where it
fell. Oh, so the house came with a boat?
Yeah, like in Lake Norman, Lake Wiley. Sometimes, you jokingly hear sometimes, just throw the boat in or throw the car in. Right. I had one where they threw the dog in, believe it or not.
Oh, my God.
That's
how mean.
Second year of real estate.
dog in?
Because they were moving to, it was an Australian Shepherd, and they were moving back to England, I think. And usually the buyer and seller aren't in the same place at the same time, but as it happened, we were going in. It was a second showing. They were coming out, and my buyer said, "Oh, ha ha, we love that dog." And they said, "Oh, ha ha, well, let us know if you want him. We're moving to England, ha ha." And then they said, "Actually, we need to figure something out for him," because what I didn't know, and I guess at the time, was if you move to England and you have take an animal with you, there's a whole quarantine period.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty extensive.
Yeah. And so they're like, "Well, I don't want to let our dog sit in quarantine for, I don't know, like a month or several weeks."
It's
and
like
so
8 weeks, yeah.
They were going to try to find a friend or someone to, but they thought, well, this is his house. This is his yard. He has friends and neighbors. So they ended up, we wrote the dog into the contract. And the first lesson I learned is be careful when you write a dog into a contract, because I didn't know the value of the dog. So I had to write, you know, dog at no, or I don't know, John Z, the Australian Shepherd, at no monetary value, you know. Otherwise, it'd mess up the appraisal.
Huh. Oh, wow.
So no houseboat, but we do have a dog.
Dog, yeah.
See, that was a
I wonder if the dog even noticed, like.
These are different people.
God, my I still get treats. Weird.
This is good, yeah.
He smells a little different.
We're in the witness protection program.
That's right.
I have to be spy dog now.
So, final last words. If people wanted to find Michael Nestor, because he's the bester, where would they find you?
I'm pretty active on Facebook. And
it's Nestor, N-E-S-T-E-R.
Correct. So, Michael Nestor, N-E-S-T-E-R on Facebook. I'm on the Twitter.
You are.
So, I think I'm the... I think I'm just Michael Nestor on the Twitter. I got the first Michael Nestor, even though there's a few more out there. I'm trying to get better on the Instagram, but I should probably not call it the Instagram or the Twitter. That probably helps me.
If you're going to call it the, it's the gram.
Yeah, call it the gram. Or our website, www.dickensmitchner.com. You can go in there and you can probably find me. But
if you want to go to Dickens Michener, you'll want to go to the show notes, just because Michener is spelled a little different.
Oh, yeah. The M-I-T-C-H-E-N-E-R. Usually people can message me on Facebook, because I've found that to be... strangely enough, Facebook has been very good to me real estate-wise, so...
Good.
We will have links to everything in the show notes.
I just wanted to Garrett Morris you when you said that. Facebook has been very, very good to me.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm old. No, that's only because you're the same age.
That's right. That's right.
So find out how much you want to spend on a house. Make sure you can get pre-approved for it. Get a good realtor, not influencing you in any way, Michael Nestor. And then... make sure that you're looking out for those red flags, and be aware. Educate yourself, right?
And then a good realtor will lead you through the next steps, which would be, you know, getting a good inspector or a good, you know, again, the lender is a big piece of it, but having a good closing attorney and a good termite inspector. But that comes from different realtors, of course. And then, you know, figuring out how you want to decorate your house. So
yeah. And neutralize if you want to sell it.
Where do you
want to
put that bat
pole? Come back sometime and talk about. I know. Seriously, you don't even know. There will be a bat pole. I just have to figure out how we're going to do it if we're on a one story.
Worst case scenario, I'm going to build a tree house and have the bat pole. Just go. That's how you get out of the tree house. So.
When you talked about Narnia, I have to admit, I always did want that bookcase that you could pull a book and then it opens. You get a
secret. Well, that would
room.
Be the bat pole. Yeah. That's how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, was it Shakespeare, and they would pull his head, and then
totally. You don't know how deadly serious I am. I also want to make like a hobbit kitchen, so that there's a tree growing up, and each of the branches is a shelf for dishes.
Well, we know enough people in theater that could probably make that work.
Right? Oh, yeah. Like he was saying, you know, he wants Stan Peele to come and paint part of our house.
I was thinking of Stan. You see what he's been doing with his place.
I know. Yeah. Yes, we've been there. We have been to the Octagonal House. It is splendiferous.
Yes.
So, but thank you, Michael, for coming on the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
We have personal reasons why we wanted to learn more. but, you know, there's a lot of people. So, you know, and here's the thing is that, you go to somebody like Michael, you talked about the fact that it has to be a good chemistry fit. And if you are a geek and you have geeky needs, you need to go to a realtor who is equally geeky and has comic book collections and is not going to be put off by that and can advise you properly on whether you're selling or buying your home, how to stage it and how to get it ready, and then how to find the right home that's going to suit your needs. So.
I have to admit, it is fun when you're out driving around that you can talk about Picard or The Mandalorian while you're looking at houses or what just happened in the recent comic book that came out, you know.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, we will have to buy our forever home because the things that I want to do to our house
permanent nature.
Probably not going to resell well unless I become famous, then we make it a museum. So. All right. Well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
You've been listening to Guardians of the Geekery. Find us on the web at guardiansofthegeekery.com and everywhere fine podcasts are found. Support the Charlotte Geeks at patreon.com/charlottegeeks. Tune in next time for another exciting adventure on Guardians of the Geekery.